Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. All right, today what we want to talk about are the recent, this past week, inflation reports. Why inflation? Well, because it affects a lot of other imminent policies and maybe policy changes. You know, to the extent that they reduce inflation, it will affect what the Federal Reserve does. And there's a lot of talk going on now in professional business circles that, and investors in particular, that the recent two reports, the consumer price report and the producer price report, indicate that the Fed will stop raising interest rates. You know, the Fed policy rate and base rate, benchmark rate, is already around, I think it's about 5.25. And we'll see what happens with the Fed on July 25th, because that's when the Fed will make another decision whether to raise rates. And, you know, as I've been saying all along, that they cannot raise rates above 5.5-6% without precipitating a further worsening of the regional banking crisis. On that banking crisis, a little digression here. You know, it's interesting that the Fed has now called for banks to increase their buffers, their cash buffers here, in anticipation of more financial instability. Not only the cash buffers, but we've got now Chase Bank and Wells Fargo indicating that they're really boosting their reserves cash buffers. Well, why are they doing that? Anticipation of maybe some instability down the road? Yeah, I think so. Just in case the Fed and the big banks are doing that. But there's a difference with the regional banks. They can't do that. They're losing their cash buffers as people are moving their deposits out of some of these weaker regional banks. So it all has to do with what's called interest rate risk. As rates continue to rise, these regional banks are in trouble increasingly. And the other shoe is going to fall here at the end of the year, early next year, in the commercial real estate sector, which is expected, if rates continue to rise, won't be able to roll over their junk bond debt. And that will mean possible bankruptcies in the commercial real estate sector, which will then impact on the regional banks, which hold almost $2 trillion of commercial real estate debt. Commercial real estate, of course, is office buildings, which we know are in trouble. We can't fill them again. Malls. People are not going to malls the way they used to. Commercial real estate also means amusement parks that are not doing so good, and hotels, and other sectors, lesser sectors. That's the commercial real estate sector. So bottom line, that's risky. They've been keeping their head above water by issuing junk bonds that pay a high interest. They have to pay a high interest, these companies that own the buildings and malls and so forth. But if the rate goes higher, they won't be able to get their loans. And that means they'll go bankrupt. And that means the debt will fall back on the regional banks. So it'll be in trouble. And clearly, the Fed's policy here with the regional banks, as it raises rates to try to stifle inflation, you know, causes a contradiction here in their monetary policy because it destabilizes the regional banking system and commercial real estate, as we just said. So the Fed is between a rock and a hard place. It intends to raise rates to do something about inflation, but at the same time, that intensifies the contradiction with the regional banks and commercial real estate sector, causes more instability. Well, the Fed clearly has decided, along with the FDIC, to bail out individual regional banks as they get in trouble. That's the point. And continue to raise interest rates. You know, they're trying to do both at the same time with two different policies. And they're pumping, last I looked at it, almost $95 billion a week into the regional banking system to keep it afloat as deposits flee to the big banks. So it's a balancing act going on in monetary policy and the Federal Reserve. And as I just said, the Fed is, in particular, the big banks, the 23 big banks that undergo stress tests, are required to add more reserves just in case. But the regional banks, smaller ones, they're not adding reserves, so they're still in trouble. Okay, so it all depends on inflation, you see, whether the Fed continues raising rates and all this continues to happen. So what's happening with inflation at this point? Well, we got a consumer price index and a producer price index report this past week, last few days. And the consumer price index came in at, for all items, at 3%. And everyone is hailing, oh, 3%, that's really great. We were at 9% last summer, and now we're down to 3%. Oh, the Fed rate hikes are working, et cetera, et cetera. But as I've said, you got to look under the covers here. You got to peel the onion to really see in the details what's going on with prices, because 3% is an average, and some elements, some items have really come down in price, but other items have not. And you get an average. Averages are misleading. You get this average for all items of 3%. Now, what has come down and what hasn't? And what's maybe rising in this June report? Well, let's look at that. First of all, goods prices. You see, when you talk about inflation, there's goods inflation. And that was discrete things, things that are manufactured, things that you buy. And, of course, housing is part of that, and all manufactured goods, what we call durables, non-durables, goods. Are part of in the inflation index. But then there's services of all kinds. Services are a bigger part of the economy. 80% of U.S. GDP is services. Only 20% is goods. Break that down, about 11-12% is manufactured goods, and the rest is construction, residential and commercial construction. That's about 20%. Well, goods prices have come down. If you look at both the CPI, Consumer Price Index, and PPI, they have definitely come down. And that's the primary cause why these inflation indexes have abated here. But if you look at services, the bigger part of the economy, services have not come down as much. They've come down a little, but they're also beginning to rise. Okay, so it's a more of a mixed picture, you know, but they're spinning it as, oh, 3% for everything, goods and services. It's so great. It's coming down. We're going to have a soft landing, et cetera. The Fed's not going to have to raise interest rates much more. Will it raise rates? I think so on July 25th. It will raise rates. Question is, will it raise rates again in September? That depends on what happens in the next two inflation indexes and job indexes. But I think they will raise it again. But let's look in more detail. Let's look in more detail and see what's behind this 3%. Okay, if you look at the June Consumer Price Index, right, it rose month to month. You know, there's two ways you got to look at it, you know, month to month, May to June, how much of an increase, and then look at, well, what's the level here after 12 months? In other words, June 22 to June 23, two ways of looking at it, right? longer term and shorter term. All right, let's look month to month. What do we see in the June Consumer Price Index in terms of increases month to month? Well, the June index for everything, all items, as they say, rose 0.2%. Remember, you know, you've got to multiply that by 12 months, and some months are weighted more than others. So, you know, the 2% here, or 0.2% from May to June, is equivalent to 3% annual. All right, so, see, that sounds pretty good, 0.2%, right? Well, in May, it rose only 0.1%. You could say, well, you know, it's kind of rising. But 1 month doesn't make a big difference, and these numbers are kind of small. But also in March, it only rose 0.1%. So you could say, well, I don't know, you know. When you look at the average for everything over 12 months, it's come down. But when you look at May to June, there's some things that are rising in price. What are they? Well, auto insurance. Big increase in auto insurance. An increase in restaurants, food away from home, as they call it. Recreation. Personal care. Well, you would expect recreation and maybe even restaurants to rise. But auto insurance, big increase. But the biggest increase was in shelter. In other words, rents. Rents are 2/3 of the June increase. Rents are still running hot, as all you renters out there know, having probably most of you had a rent increase hike from your landlord this year. Right, and certainly more than the 5% average that they talk about here in the government statistics. Okay, shelter, in other words, which is mostly rents, increased 2/3 of the 0.2% June increase. Auto insurance, big increase too. Why auto insurance, big increase? Well, you know. Driving. They expect people to drive more here over the summer, and auto insurance companies in general, which are not very competitive, jacked up their rates. Yeah. Also important to note, you know, behind below the surface here is what's happening with energy. Let's look at May energy, and that was gasoline, fuel oil, energy services, electricity, not gas, natural gas. That's all energy, right? In May, all those numbers in the consumer price index declined significantly. Gasoline prices in just 1 month in May were down 5.6% in the consumer price index. Fuel oil down 7.7%. Right? Electricity down 1%. Natural gas down 2.6%. So we had big declines in May in energy, which is a big element of the total consumer price index. What happened in June? No longer declining. All those items have registered an increase in June. Now, remember, the average, you know, doesn't tell you a lot. You know, 0.2% rise, except, you know, May was 0.1%, right? Okay, you know, what can you see there? Well, you got to break it down and look at the details. And one of the disturbing details, I think, is that energy prices, gas prices, are no longer falling in June, which you would expect over the summer. They are rising. And rising significantly. You know, you look at the gasoline, rose 1% after in June, after falling 5.6% in May. You know, that's significant, I think. That's like at least a 10-12% increase if it continues in gasoline prices over the year. And if you're paying $4.50 a gallon of gas, you're going to be paying $5. $5. And backing that up, we can see crude oil prices global are rising as well the last several weeks as OPEC cuts its supply and raises its crude oil price. And as we see increasing problems in production in certain other areas of the world, like oil producing in Africa and so forth, in trouble. So we've got shortages, growing supply issues for crude oil, which get passed down through into gasoline and other sources of energy. But the bottom line here, what I've said so far, is that we've got energy prices rising again after big, big declines. And we've got rent chronically high, continuing. And we have items like auto insurance really escalating. So what offsets this? Well, offsetting this are declines from record highs in certain other areas like airline fares. Airline fares 1 month down 8.1%. In other words, these sky-high airline prices just weren't being sustainable anymore. And airlines have had to reduce their cut their prices. And the same with lodging. Lodging in 1 month down 2.0%. And these things average out, as I said. They average out to get the what looks like a tepid 0.2% increase in June. But underlying it are some worrisome rises in certain areas like rents, insurance, energy, and other areas like recreation, personal care. Okay. Now, you need to understand what's going on with the consumer price index and these indexes. Actually, these indexes lowball inflation, even where they're rising. How is this? Why does this happen? How does this happen? Well, just give you a few examples of some questionable statistical methodologies the government uses in calculating prices. Okay? I've said it before a couple of times. There's this oxymoron category called owner's equivalent rent. You know, if you're renting, you're paying a certain amount every month, right, for your accommodations. But if you're a homeowner, you're not renting. You got a home, right? No, that's not how the government does it. The government has a category in which it assumes homeowners pay themselves rent. It's called owner's equivalent rent. You know, there's about 50 million household units actually renting, truly renting. And then there's about 50 million, roughly, in the U.S., that are homeowners. So roughly the same amount. You know, I may be off a couple million in each direction here, but roughly the same. And if I add 50 million homeowners paying them rent, then my denominator grows, and therefore the percentage increase gets cut in half for actual renters. You see, so that's how they keep the number of rent contribution to the consumer price index dampened. You see, owner equivalent rent. Very questionable why they do that. Well, I think they do that to minimize the contribution of rent. And remember, rent is 2/3 of the consumer price index last month, and that's a lowball. That's a lowball. Okay, another questionable methodology used by the government is what they call hedonic pricing. Hedonic pricing. I'm not going to define hedonic for you, but simply put, it means that the government reduces the price of something in their total calculation based upon what they believe are quality increases in the goods or service. In other words, not what the good, the product was actually sold for and you paid for it, but a number that the government assumes is the price increase, usually a price decrease if it's a quality increase. For example, let me give you one good example. Smartphones. Okay? You're not paying less for a smartphone, for an iPhone, or a Galaxy. No, no. You're actually paying the same or more, right? Well, but the government and its statistic over the past year assumed that smartphone prices declined 16.1% because of the quality increase. Quality, what do you mean quality increase? I mean more features and more function. You're paying the same amount for more features or function, so the government says, oh, the price went down. It's not an actual price in the market price. It's just the price they use, the assumption they use in calculating the CPI. So that's another, a second area of questionable statistics that dampen the overall CPI. Another one is choosing different base years for calculating the price index. What do we mean, base year? Well, all these inflation indexes are percentages, right? Well, if you got a change in percentage change, it has to be based upon a benchmark, a base year. If my base year, for example, was the 2009-10 Great Recession when prices were falling, then my increase this year would be much higher than if my base year was 2005 when prices were already high. So picking a base year arbitrarily, you can take certain very significant items in the CPI basket of 450 goods and services, and you know, your base year reduces it. That's another thing. It's a basket of goods. CPI is a basket of 450 most goods, and those 450 different goods and services have different weights in calculating the CPI. They're not all equal. In other words, you don't take prices for each one and divide it by 450. No. Shelter and food get more weight, and transport and so forth, medical, et cetera, and all the rest after that. So if you play around with the base index for certain highly weighted goods or services, you can have the general effect of dampening the index as well. Well, the Bureau of Labor Statistics uses 14 different base years in calculating different goods. They're not all calculated from the same base year. They're different base years. And some of them are selective to use a base year that minimizes what otherwise would be a price increase for that particular goods or service, right? So these are some of the, there's a lot of different methodological means by which the government, Bureau of Labor Statistics, can dampen statistics. You know, another one is seasonality adjustments. You know, the number for food in the winter, food, the seasonal adjustment is downward. And for food, fresh food and vegetables, the seasonal adjustment is upward. You see, all these numbers are seasonally adjusted, as they say. So, you know, depending on what your assumption is for the seasonality adjustment, you can also dampen the overall price index. I believe COVID upset a lot of these statistical methodologies, the COVID years, you know, the economy restructured in certain ways. And I think a lot of these methodologies, which were developed pre-COVID, are kind of, you know, questionable now. And I think they need to relook at some of these methodologies, particularly seasonality. adjustments here. Well, you know, the Bureau of Labor Statistics tends to do this, but not overnight. It usually takes years before they come up with a change. Okay, so those are just some of the ways that statistical assumptions can reduce the overall CPI price level. You know, it's not something they just did last month for the June price index. This has been going on for quite some time. But for June, you know, bottom line, what you got to worry about if you look under the covers is shelter and rent is still very high. And energy prices are beginning to rise. And then you have the other problems of certain areas like insurance companies, price gouging, and so forth. As I've been saying, too, you've got to look at the differences between services in the CPI and goods, actual discrete things in CPI. And when you look at services, the increase in price is much higher than all items, right? Food and energy, of course, can be taken out of the overall index. They break it down. There's all items. That's the 3% increase over 12 months. But when you subtract food and energy costs, then the inflation rate is 4.8% for the last 12 months. And food itself rising almost 6% still, 5.7%. Big decreases over the past 12 months in energy, as I said. Energy. If you look at the 12-month June 22, 2023, you see gasoline prices down 26%, fuel oil 36%, natural gas 18%, energy together, used cars, which really spiked last year, down 5.2%, right? But if you look at services, just services, this is important, right? If you look at what services last month rose, 6.2%, not 3%. 3% is overall because goods prices are down 20% of the economy, 80% of the economy. Services prices are rising. All services, right? In May, I think, was 5.3%. Now it's 6.2%. It's going in the wrong direction. Services are going in the wrong direction over the course of the year, the past year. And that's the problem. You see, the Fed is having a hard time shaking out services inflation. It's been able to have an impact on goods inflation. And then the question is, well, why goods inflation? Is the Fed solely responsible for that? Well, I don't believe so. I think, in part, the slowing global economy has reduced demand for goods globally, exports, imports, and that's playing a big role in bringing down goods prices. But services prices are more domestic, not global. The Fed is having a hard time shaking out services inflation. In fact, I would argue services inflation is rising, not falling. That's why when you look at all the spin and the hype and the business media and so forth, you know, oh, 3%. Oh, wow, we're doing so great, 3%. It was 9%. Now we're down to 3%, right? But when you look at the services part, it's at 6.2% and up from May's 5.3%. What's going on? Right? What's going on? Well, you know, services costs are still rising. And that's because, even the Fed admits, that's because interest rates aren't high enough yet to cause enough unemployment to cause enough decline in wages and disposable income to reduce demand for services. Unemployment is not high enough. And that's what the Fed has been saying now for 8 months. That's what Fed Chair Powell has been saying in his press conferences, saying that, well, we just don't have enough unemployment to dampen demand for services. And we need more unemployment. Therefore, we're going to raise rates even higher to generate more unemployment. The problem is rates at 5.5% is not generating the level of unemployment to reduce wages and disposable income and therefore consumer demand for services. That's not happening yet, which means the Fed has to raise interest rates more. Or what the Fed can do is keep rates at the level, 5.5%. Try not to precipitate worse instability in the banking sector, right? Keep them there for a while and see whether it eventually generates more unemployment in services employment and therefore less consumer demand. I think that's what the Fed is going to do. It's going to raise rates here, certainly in July, maybe again in September. That's questionable. But it's going to keep them there for quite some time, for the rest of the year for sure, and maybe into first quarter of next year, to see if it can generate enough unemployment in services or in general to dampen consumer demand for services and therefore lower service prices. That's the strategy right now, I believe, right? Certain services prices have come down over the past year. I mentioned airline fares, almost 20% less airline fares. Well, they were astronomical. So it's coming down from an astronomical height, right? Other things like even other goods have not come down that much. Bakery goods, for example, breads and sugar and so forth, frozen food, right, sugar processed foods, right, and breads and bakery goods are still double digit. Bread prices over the past year have risen 10 to 12%. Frozen foods, 12 to 18%. Sugar-related products, you know, candies and beverages and so forth, also double-digit, 11, 13%. Well, why is this? Well, this is because these companies that produce these things are monopolistic. In other words, three or four of them control the market, and they all raise their prices, and the government doesn't do anything about it. Oh, they say antitrust. Antitrust is dead, has been for decades. And they get away from it. I forget, is it General Mills or Kellogg? I forget which of these bakery giants recently bragged publicly that their profits over the past year have doubled, but they're not selling any more bread. Well, if your profits double, that means that your prices went up, right? They're price gouging the hell out of us. In those monopolistic industries, they're price gouging us. They call this greedflation, you know, to cover up the fact that it's price gouging by big corporations. So we got price gouging going on in select industries. Bakery goods are one example of that. And Fed rate hikes can't do anything about that. There's nothing the Fed can do to cause unemployment, dampen demand, really slow price gouging, because, in fact, if demand declines, these monopolistic companies will just raise their prices more to maintain their profits. You're almost encouraging them to raise price more, to gouge more, by causing unemployment and declining demand. Insurance costs in general over the past year have been very high, almost 20% increase. As you all know, right, your home insurance, your auto insurance, your health insurance premiums, they've all gone up. And so have your utilities. Your utility costs have gone up significantly. certain foods have come down. Remember the eggs problem? The eggs that were so high, they were like $7, $8 a dozen at one point there. Well, they've come down, of course, just as airline fares have come down. And that's contributed to the decline here for all items that we're talking about. Energy prices came down significantly as well. Well, that's global. That's not just the Fed doing its job here. So, you know, bottom line, the consumer prices, if you look at it, this 3% is really misleading. 12 months, you know, down to 3% for all items, including food, energy, and services, right? If you take out food and energy, it's still 4.8%. Food, 5.7%. All services, 6.2%. And by the way, that 6.2% has been stuck. It's been stuck at that level here for at least 6 months, you know, in the 5 to 6% range for services inflation. They just can't get it down any further. And in June, we see an increase going on from May in a number of areas. All items minus food, we see an increase in June, right? Commodities, in other words, goods, we see an increase in June from May. All items minus food and shelter, we see an increase in June. Rent, we see an increase in June. Fuel and utilities, we see an increase in June. All these areas, you know, signal to me that, you know, this is not a general retreat in the inflation index, particularly for services. Some areas, select areas, are coming down, airline fares and so forth, but they're coming down from astronomical high level. And of course, we had big declines in gasoline, fuel, oil. But as I said, last month, these things have turned positive. They're rising again. Our rent is chronically high. Insurances are chronically high. Okay, so that's my analysis of the consumer price index. You know, bottom line, don't be fooled by 3% spin. Look under the covers, and you will see some disturbing trends in the June numbers. Disturbing with energy and fuel, disturbing with chronically high items, with price gouging going on, and rent, of course, still very high and not abating very much. Okay, that's my take on the consumer price index. Now, we also got last week, a report on the Producer Price Index for June. Producer prices are prices that businesses pay when they buy something. You know, consumer prices when consumers buy something. But businesses buy goods and services from other businesses. And the PPI, to some extent, is an indicator of rising business costs that may get passed on into consumer prices. Right. So what do we see with the producer price index? Well, just like the consumer price index, you have goods and services. Right? You've got to distinguish when you want to slice the onion here between goods and services. And you also have another dichotomy here in producer prices, and that's final demand producer prices and intermediate demand producer prices. Final demand means, you know, what businesses pay for goods and services before they issue their goods or services for sale, right? Final demand. And if you look at final demand for the PPI, for goods, no change. No change for goods. And, you know, in other words, the prices, no price rise from May to June for final demand for producer prices. What about services? Whoops, you see a 0.2% continued increase in services in June, right? Even though we had a big decline in producer price services for transport and warehousing services. Big decline in transport and warehousing services down 0.09. That's big for 1 month. Transport and warehouse services. Why transport and warehouses services? Because the economy's slowing, right? Not as much transporting of goods going on. This is goods services now. I mean, goods producer prices. And warehousing. Well, if you're not selling as much goods, then, of course, you're not warehousing as much of them. So transport, you know, which is mostly trucking and rail and some airlines, and warehousing services are down significantly, which indicate a slowing of the economy going on, right? Goods have been contracting. Producer price, goods for producers, has been contracting in price February, March, and May, and not changed at all in April and June, right? So goods prices, as I said, have come down significantly and is mostly responsible at the consumer price level for the decline, not service prices, which is being chronically high. And we see the same thing reflected in the producer price index. Goods prices, flat or declining, no change, you know, but services creeping up. So what does this mean? Well, this means that low prices or no price changes for producer businesses, goods, purchases, will likely be passed on into similar no increases for consumer goods. Goods, not services, right? Services in the June producer price index that rose are many hotels, insurances, hospitals, electricity, eggs, medical devices, gasoline up 3.4%, gasoline services in 1 month. Declining, well, trucking and warehousing, residential real estate loan services, right? And goods of various kinds, right? Declining. Okay, so to sum up producer prices, what do we got? We got energy prices rising. Once again, final demand for goods, right? Energy prices. In May, they declined 6.8% in 1 month. In June, they rose 0.7% in 1 month. So we see reflected at the producer price level the same increase in energy and gasoline coming. And now it's spilling over into the consumer price area where we see energy and gasoline prices, electricity, and so forth, rising as well. So we can expect these rising producer prices to get passed through into consumer prices throughout the summer here. It's coming. Conversely, we can see transport and warehousing at the producer price level declining, and therefore at the consumer price level declining. So, you know, the producer prices kind of, I would say, exacerbates consumer prices, but has an effect. And we see the same trend in both producer prices and consumer prices. Certain areas coming down significantly, but certain areas chronic and not coming down, and even some rising, like in energy. And that energy price rising is backed up by rising prices the last 3 weeks in global crude oil prices. So that's my take on this inflation index, and I guess bottom line, you know, I'm not as optimistic that the Fed has inflation under control. The markets meaning investors, financial investors, kind of like the 3% number for CPI, and the fact that the PPI came in at only 0.1%, right? And no change in goods prices. They kind of like that, and they're betting, speculators are betting that the Fed is going to halt interest rate hikes. It won't hike in July. I believe it will hike in July. It has to hike in July. Because if it doesn't, that means the markets and investors are then going to say, oh, here come the rate cuts here in September. And the Fed wants to keep these rates high for some time, at least through the end of the year. And if it doesn't raise rates in July, it will undercut that whole strategy. Right. So we need to look at what's going to happen with inflation in the next two releases, August and September, to really see if the Fed's interest rate strategy, raising rates to 5.5% and holding them there, is successful and does bring down inflation. I think it was Chase or one of the other big banks predicted, or maybe it was Goldman Sachs, predicted that, oh, by the end of 2024, inflation will be down to 2.5% and unemployment will be up to only 4.5%. That's their prediction. Okay. Well, that means a soft landing economically. Right. Soft landing meaning no recession or deeper recession, depending on your analysis. That's what they're betting. They're betting on a soft landing. When they say that, I don't think that's what's going to happen. I don't think there will be a soft landing. I think the Fed rate hikes, even if they don't continue to hike into 24, will precipitate a deeper recession and more unemployment than 4.5% here, 18 months from now. And why? Because the global economy is slowing down everywhere virtually. The big factor in that slowdown is China. China coming out of its zero COVID policy, you know, had a brief a boost of economic activity in the first quarter this year, but now it's slowing again. China economic recovery is slowing, and the U.S. Economy is slowing, and this war continues in Ukraine, which means that Europe is not going to accelerate in terms of growth. So you look everywhere, and the advanced economies, there's no real engine of economic growth firing on all cylinders here. So I think we're going to see a continue slouching towards, well, slower economic growth, at least, maybe even a global recession. We'll see. Certainly, if there's a financial instability event in commercial real estate or regional banking crisis or wherever, that will support the idea of a slowing of the global economy. And as that happens, that causes the U.S. economy to slower proportionally. Okay, so we see the real economy is influenced by Fed and other central banks' monetary policy, its interest rate policies, of course, if it happens by financial instability, the real economy globally, and what the Fed does here is determined by what happens with inflation. And then following the logic, as we've just said, inflation is not tamed. Goods inflation is tamed. Goods inflation is tamed, both at the consumer and the producer level, with a few exceptions, right? But services inflation is not tamed. You know, you got certain outliers in services that seem to be coming down, but like airline fares, but that's only from astronomical heights. If you look at the rest of the services, they're still chronically high. And the Fed raising interest rates to 5.5% can't seem to shake out services inflation. Can't seem to make that happen. Well, that's because there's not enough unemployment in services to dampen demand, income and demand for services. And the Fed's going to have to raise interest rates higher to do that. But that does what? That destabilizes the banking system, particularly the smaller banks. So the Fed in monetary policy, capitalist monetary policy, is between a rock and a hard place. It's got to raise interest rates higher to shake out services inflation, higher than it has, right? But raising them higher than it has puts more stress on the stability of the banking system. So it's between a rock and a hard place. So what is the Fed going to do? I think the Fed will not raise rates significantly higher. Its hope is that by maybe raising it one more time and sticking them there and waiting long enough, it will create the services unemployment and services demand decline. I think that's what it's planning on. And that way, it can just deal with the regional banking crisis bank by bank, and have the FDIC and Fed bail out individual banks if they don't make it, you see. It's this policy of raising rates or keeping them high, which exacerbates the banking stability. And, okay, we'll clean up the banking instability case by case rather than the whole regional banking system. Which, by the way, if they really wanted to, they could re-regulate the regional banking system. The reason it got in trouble was they totally deregulated it, eliminated it from stress tests and so forth in 2017. And they let these banks, regional banks, speculate and jump onto bubbles in crypto and tech and so forth, and they got in trouble, right? We've talked about that before. One way to resolve that would be simply to re-regulate them the way they were before 2017. Well, they haven't done that. The government hasn't done that. It doesn't want to re-regulate the regional banks because it thinks it can handle it case by case as it gets worse. Well, they just may have, if the commercial real estate sector crashes, they just may have more on their hands than they can handle, and they can't do it one by one. But so far, you know, they've done it one by one, you know, with the Silicon Valley Bank and a couple of the other banks, Signature Bank and so forth. And they think they can continue doing it that way, right? So they're walking the tightrope, monetary policy and Fed walking a tightrope. Between banking instability management and inflation control. And they're going to continue trying to walk that tightrope. Whether they get away with it or not, we will see by the end of the year. Because that's when, the commercial real estate sector has to roll over $1.7 trillion in junk debt. That's a lot. Held mostly by the smaller regional banks, by the way. Yeah. Who won't be able to finance and roll over that debt for a lot of those office building companies and mall building and managing companies. They won't be able to. Whether the government comes up with another resolution to that, maybe getting the big banks, you know, Chase and Wells, to step in and bail out the regional commercial real estate will remains to be seen. And, you know, it's interesting that Jamie Dimon, the head, the CEO of the big bank there, Chase, recently came out, I think a day or two ago, saying, oh, you know, we got to get people back to work in these buildings. He doesn't want to get caught holding the debt if these office building companies, management companies go under. You know, so, and there's a push by businesses to try to get their workers back into the big urban office buildings. I don't think it's going to work. I think that train's left the station. They're not going to be able to force people. You'll see some companies try to do that, but they're going to have a hard time forcing people to commute an hour, 2 hours a day for the money that they're making back into the city centers. Okay, so we're gonna see this dance go on between inflation and the Fed and interest rate policy and banking instability here for the rest of the year. It's not over. But what it reflects is, as I said last week on the show, growing contradictions in capitalist neoliberal monetary policy. Growing contradictions. The monetary policy, you see the greatest contradictions. And I just described that contradiction, right? But you see it as well in fiscal policy. We're running $1 trillion annual deficit still, despite the debt ceiling deal, remember? They're running over $1 trillion. What's the biggest increase in the deficit? And therefore, the national debt, which is just cumulative deficits, what's the biggest increase item? Interest on the debt. Data just came out that for the first 9 months, the government has to pay interest on its treasury bills and notes, $652 billion paid. We're going to have a $900 billion interest cost on the debt this year. You know, the fiscal year ends September 30th, October 1st to September 30th. Well, since October 1st of last year through June, $652 billion. Huge interest payments on the debt. Yeah. And, you know, in previous years here, the Fed was earning about $90 billion a year that it added to the various sources that it was adding to the U.S. Treasury. Well, that is not earning anything anymore. You know, it's paying out $650 billion and not earning and contributing anything. Maybe January, $131 billion more in interest on the debt. Big issue. Because if that's increasing the government deficit, they're going to have to look, the government's going to have to look at other ways to offset it. Well, they're not going to offset it in military spending, that's for damn sure, right? Over $200 billion thrown at Ukraine here, and more coming, and more if the U.S. goes to war. You know, Biden just announced. Of two reserves for Eastern Europe. Okay, we're out of time. I'm out of here. Next week, I want to talk about what is labor exploitation. What's going on?